Hey, welcome to another installment of Strewn Along the Path. This time I'm going to be talking more about Star Wars, but I'm actually going to be talking about it with Rish Outfield from the Dune Steve Audio Fiction Magazine. And after my last couple installments of Strewn Along the Path, Rish emailed me and said, "Hey man, I'd love to talk with you about Star Wars. Your conversation brought up a bunch of stuff, a bunch of questions for you, and I think Rish would always like to talk about Star Wars, so hey, welcome to the path here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's a dark and an evil path. It's an easy path. Quicker, more seductive.
Yes, it is. So I guess, Rish, maybe we can just start out with you briefly talking about, you know, when you first saw Star Wars and what you liked best, and probably what we'll talk about is just moments from the first three movies that kind of define our understanding of the Star Wars movies. So when did you first see Star Wars?
I was a little kid, and someone had rented, I'm assuming, the VHS, and we watched it at the Legion Hall, which is the the veterans place, the old folks home now, but in those days it was the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, meeting house, I suppose. And I was too little to really pay attention to it. I kick myself all these years later because, you know, I could have become obsessed a year early. But yeah, they just had it on a television screen, the TV screen that was in there. And there were a bunch of kids on the floor, and I think I just ended up playing with my cousin before they even got to the cantina, because that would have hooked me. I was a kid that was into monsters, and to see all those monsters, I would have been so excited. It wasn't until May of 83 that I became a Star Wars fan, and it was Return of the Jedi. My mom took me to see it, even though I hadn't seen the other films, and I was blown away. I was so excited about it starts with monsters. So, you know, there was a cheat there. I don't know. I had seen E.T. in 82 the year before, and I'd seen Raiders of the Lost Ark in 81. And all three of those movies had made me want to, I don't know if it made me want to make movies, but they made me want to have adventures and look beyond the horizon and imagine what else is out there. And with Jedi, I'd never seen the other two Star Wars movies, but I wanted to. I didn't want to just see them. I wanted the toys like my friends had, and there were comic books, and I wanted those, and I wanted to know more. And so, yeah, that year, 83, was when I first got my first Star Wars guy. It was Admiral Ackbar, and that's all I asked for my birthday and for Christmas was the toys. And my grandmother got me the soundtrack to Return of the Jedi, and I was hooked. And when I went back to school at the end of August, a bunch of other kids had also seen Return of the Jedi, and they were also suddenly super into Star Wars, and there were trading cards, the Topps cards that the general store had. And we all started to collect them, and we formed this bond of this group of three or four kids that all just loved Return of the Jedi and loved Star Wars. And they had already been into Star Wars before I was, but luckily I got to come in on it and ask them what happened in Empire Strikes Back and look at their toys from the first two movies. And I don't know, there was some kind of bond there that continued up until, I mean, it was just like years later. But I always thanked Star Wars for that. I mean, it gave me my best friend.
Yeah, you know, I think it really does. You know, you can start up a conversation about Star Wars, and pretty much everybody, or not everybody, but most people know enough about it and can share their opinions. And it's usually a positive reaction talking to somebody about it. And that's interesting coming in on Return of the Jedi. Did you feel cheated that you weren't hanging on pins and needles to find out if, or that big shock that Darth Vader was Luke's father?
Well, sure, in a way, because I had so many friends that have had that playground discussion of, no, he couldn't really be his father, or yes, he is, or, you know, why would he lie? Or at the end, Luke says to Obi-Wan, you know, that it's true, and I never had that argument because I was introduced to Darth Vader as Luke's father, you know, in that third movie. Until the special editions came out, I felt it was such a ripoff that I didn't get to see those first two movies in the theater. I know myself, I would have been hooked had I seen them, you know, in 77. My mom and dad went, and I still remember there was one movie theater that was about 20 miles away, because I grew up in a little farming community, and we had, like I said, a general store, and it's exactly what it sounds like, you know. It was a throwback to something from, like, the Great Depression, and we had a gas station, but nothing else. There were no movie theaters, there were no malls, there were no streetlights or stoplights, you know, any of that stuff. But my mom and dad went to see Star Wars, and I don't know if it was 77. It might have been one of the many re-releases, like 78. But I wish that they had taken me.
I don't know. That I remember the cantina scene. That was one of the things that I really liked about it. It really made it seem foreign to me. It was something different than I had ever seen before. So I guess, looking back, what moments then define Star Wars for you? What characters, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, in those days, if you remember, like, the subtitle of Star Wars before it was A New Hope was From the Adventures of Luke Skywalker. And the Splinter of the Mind's Eye was From the Adventures of Luke Skywalker, and I think Empire might have been as well. So, you know, he was the hero character, the character that every kid wanted to be, or at least for me and my friends, because I saw Jedi, and then immediately asked my dad to rent a VCR. And the cassette of Star Wars, so I could see Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Empire hadn't come out on video yet. I don't think it came out until 84. And so I hadn't seen Luke just get the snot kicked out of him. And I think that would probably make kids not want to be Luke. But since I never saw that, of course I wanted to be this, you know, this stoic guy with this power and this ability. And he has the journey from the farm boy to a man, you know, who can be respected and feared. So I guess Luke embodied Star Wars as a kid. But now it's really Darth Vader, and I think that's partly due to the prequels. Lucas has, for some reason, decided that it's all about Anakin Skywalker. But the image of Vader, the design of the mask, the breathing, the mystery of not seeing his face, although, you know, I saw his face first, was just, I mean, I think he's the iconic character in all six movies. And after Vader, now I would say it's the droids, because they are the entry, also entry level characters, but they're the narrators almost. I believe they're the first characters that we meet in Star Wars, and they go through until the end of Jedi. I think I remember Lucas saying that in the hidden fortress there were the two peasants that would kind of comment on what was going on, and they weren't the heroes, they were just sort of on the sidelines, but they were there to experience all of the major plot points in that movie. And he said, I was really impressed by that, you know, I was not a samurai, I was not a warrior and all that stuff, but I could be like these peasants, and I loved that they had just happened to be there. And so he created the droids to sort of be like that. And I think that that's really neat, in that they are lower class citizens in the Star Wars universe. You know, you're droids. We don't serve their kind. They have to wait outside.
Right.
And yet those two each save the world, or save the universe, a couple of times. That stuff is just so neat. You know, the unsung hero, the guy that we know had a huge part in good destroying evil, but nobody else realizes. To me, that's really, it's something that's worked in storytelling for years and years and years, but it really works in Star Wars. And I see, I hold Star Wars up as like the example to always bring up, you know, whenever you're talking about the hero's journey, or you're talking about Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, or story structure, or the climax or something, for some reason, I always use Star Wars. And maybe film teachers don't use it anymore. Maybe they use Harry Potter, or maybe they use Tangled, or I have no idea what they would use today. But for our generation, that was the touchstone. That was the template. Everybody had seen Star Wars. And structure is so obvious of, okay, so when is the call to adventure? When does that happen? I mean, he even says, you know, I want to come with you to Alderaan and become a Jedi like my father. And I don't know, that's something, it's reassuring almost to know that you can make that comment and everybody will get it, and everybody will agree, okay, that's when Act 2 begins.
Right, and then just the three movies are exactly what the three-act play scenario is, where you have the first act of the play is where you set all the characters up and you get them to a certain point, and then Act 2 is where these characters suffer and they are at their worst against the – or not at their worst, but they face their worst struggles. And then that sets up the third act, which is the resolution, and there's conflict and stuff there, but it eventually everything gets resolved. And so, like you said, I think that's a perfect example of storytelling. You know, it's a good guide to how to do that. And when you were talking about the droids, I guess I was thinking back, that's who we played on the playground after seeing Star Wars. I remember my friend would be C-3PO and wanted me to be R2-D2, and then we'd take turns, you know, doing those roles. And so I think that the droids really are kind of that crucial, not crucial, I guess, but
Marshall,
the background.
There are no children in the Star Wars trilogy. And so do you think that the droids are the equivalent of the children that kids could relate to and say, I'm like that guy?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Also, seeing Return of the Jedi first, I guess, did you feel kind of strange when Leia was kissing her brother Luke in the on Hoth when you finally saw Empire Strikes Back?
You know, I didn't. I never had a problem with that. And people tend to say it now, and they I think they blow it out of proportion, that it's a much bigger deal than it is. I was too young to realize that there was any stigma attached to that kind of thing. And, you know, there's not any really passionate kissing. It's just like a tentative, maybe just the beginnings of romance. If there had been between Luke and Leia what there was with Han and Leia, I mean, I think these people could complain a lot louder. Or they complain loudly anyway, but it was an innocence. I think that there's an innocence in, at least a sexual innocence, through all three of those movies. I mean, and the prequels as well. There's just not any... I guess Lucas has said that he's made it for children. And, you know, when Luke first sees Leia and he tilts his head and he looks at her, I never got like that. That's a lustful look. It's just like, oh, wow, you know, kind of thing. We never had princesses on our sand world. Look at that, you know, look how beautiful that woman, that girl is, who I would never have a chance with, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's easy to relate to, even now as an adult. I like that that aspect of it. And Han is so brash, and he's the go-getter, and he's the guy that we want to be. But I'm still that guy who sees her and you know, doesn't know what to say, and she says the first thing, "Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?" So, you know, that's the first thing she does is insult him.
Right.
I don't know. There's so much stuff I love about those movies, and I've talked to lots of people that are young. You know, when I was at Comic-Con, I was in line for the Hallmark ornaments, and the guys next to me, one of them was like 20, but his point of view was so different from mine. For him, there had always been 6 movies, and he didn't have a huge gap between original trilogy and prequel trilogy in his mind, and like the characters that he loved were from the Clone Wars cartoon, like Ahsoka Tano and Anakin Skywalker. I guess the Anakin I've never seen, the one in between episode 2 and episode 3. And I would ask him questions, and it was just so strange to hear his answers. And I'm sure he'll know how I feel, you know, after these new movies start coming out. But
that stuff is so far off my radar. You know, I mean, yeah, I've seen the Clone Wars stuff, but you know, I don't really pay attention to a lot of that.
But let me ask you about your kids. Have they seen all 6 movies, or they've only seen the original trilogy?
No, they've seen all 6.
And did you show them in release order or in chronological order?
In release order. Yeah, I made sure they saw Star Wars first, then Empire Strikes Back, then Return of the Jedi, and then they could watch the prequels. Now and then after that, they watch them in all kinds of different orders. But I wanted them to have that same kind of experience that I did.
And did they appreciate the original trilogy like you do, or are they just 6 movies to them?
No, I think they do. Like my youngest son, he probably has watched it the most. He's 7. And for a while there, that's all he would watch was the 6 Star Wars movies. And he seems to like Return of the Jedi the best. I don't know if it's because of the Ewoks or I don't know why. But he would always go back to Episode 6 a lot. More than that one, probably. And they never said anything, you know, like a lot of people say, well, the kids like Jar Jar and they... You know, we hate him because it was such a change from what was in the original trilogy, and it was definitely hammed up to be for the kids. But they've never really said whether they care about him or not. He's just another character in the lineup. Oh, and then I remember I was going to ask you, too. Did you feel, we were talking about the droids and how they were in a point of view for the first trilogy. Did you feel that they should have been involved in the prequels? Were they hammed up too much in the prequels? Because I liked C-3PO and R2-D2 being in episode 1, but then as we got in episode 2, just every line was kind of a hammy, jokey, comic relief kind of thing, and I started to feel like they were being almost, you know, mocked rather than just as essential as they were to the first one. Did you feel that way too?
Well, I you know, I'd never even thought of it, except for I absolutely hate the puns in episode 2.
Yeah.
The stuff that they do with 3PO in that, and I hate the stuff they do, the comic relief stuff with R2 at the beginning of the 3rd prequel. And yeah, I've analyzed these movies so many times, the new movies. For me, it seems like it's really easy to say where they went wrong. But it's not so easy to say, well, how might they have gone right? And I think with the droids, if they had already known one another and already been in existence the first time we meet them, that would have saved... You know, that would have been a shortcut that I think would have been fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've met lots of people that think that 3PO is annoying. I mean, I love him to death, but I wonder if he's always been somewhat annoying and that was just ratcheted up in the prequels.
Yeah, I think it definitely was. I mean, I didn't find him annoying at all in the first three. I mean, that was, you know, he was annoying to the other characters, and that was fun, but he wasn't annoying to me. You know, he really was kind of that, like, and hot when they closed the bay doors or whatever in Hoth when Han and Luke were out in the snowfields. C-3PO just keeps talking and just keeps saying things, even though it's inappropriate and it's bothering everybody. But that's kind of his way of dealing with things. You know, his nervous tendency was to just keep talking and keep trying to reassure everybody. So you could almost see that emotion in there, and I thought that was great. But then in the prequels, it's like you said, it was just here's the next pun, here's the next, you know, thing to make the kids laugh or whatever.
Well, it's hard again to take a step back because I love the original trilogy so much that I'm blind to any flaws that it might have. But the emotion that those two characters were able to convey, you know, just when the noise R2 makes when 3PO says, "No, I don't think he likes you either," you know, that, or whatever it is, "I don't think he likes you at all." Yeah. "I don't like you either." That is so human. And then when 3PO says, "Sir, if any of my circuits or gears will help, I'll gladly donate them," right, at the end of the movie to help R2. Those are people, you know what I mean? That care and feel. And I don't really remember that in the prequels with those two characters.
Yeah, nobody had any real emotions in the prequels. I think that's what was lacking. You know, towards the, like, that last scene, of course, I think it had to with Anakin and Obi-Wan. You know, you could really feel Obi-Wan's pain. And you could really feel Anakin's hate. I think that was done really well. But a lot of the other emotion wasn't there, I don't think. Even though I enjoyed episode 1 probably more than most people do. And I might enjoy episode 2 less than other people do. But I think that emotion... But like you said, it's hard to look at it from a different perspective because... You know, we had seen the first ones many, many times before we saw the prequels.
It may have something to do with when we saw them, too. I have an uncle who was raised Mennonite, and he is always disdainful of the things that he considers to be, like, wasteful, wastes of time, wastes of money, wastes of energy. And his son and I always get together and talk about Star Wars, because his son loves Star Wars, too. And the last time I saw him, he said, "What is it about Star Wars that you, why do you continue to rant about these movies when there are so many other more important things?" And I thought, does he really want me to answer this, or is he just trying to criticize me? And he didn't say anything, and so I thought, okay, I will try and figure out why. And the thing that I said was, when I first saw these movies, I thought it was real. I thought that there was a place you could go and there were Wookiees and huts and robots. And I was young enough to have been swept away and shown another world that I thought existed. And when I found out that it didn't exist, I was even more impressed. Rather than being disappointed and it's all, "Oh, I was lied to." It's like, they made all of this up. That was a man in the suit, not right, really a Wookiee. And all that, and I was just like, I was shown, my eyes were open at the power of storytelling and how you could make an entire universe that didn't exist but convince me that it did. And that was part of why I wanted to be a storyteller. And he sort of shrugged and he's like, "All right," you know, I think he said, "Well, that may be a valid answer." I still think it's a waste of time, but okay.
Yeah.
Now I understand a little bit more. And that's just how it is with me. I am so grateful to these movies for opening up my imagination and making me believe in things. And isn't that what Lucas used to say, is that after Vietnam and Richard Nixon, nobody believed in anything anymore.
Yeah.
They had been lied to, and they became nihilistic, and movies were pessimistic and dour. And he said, I wanted to make something like what existed when I was a child. And there was hope, and there was adventure, and there was joy. And for that, you know, it's like he totally succeeded in me.
You know, it wasn't until later that I realized there were other stories like King Arthur and things that, you know, people used to get excited about with the adventure, and Robin Hood and things like that. My introduction to that was Star Wars. And so it's because of my enjoyment of Star Wars that I'm able to go back and enjoy some of these other things that I missed out on before I was old enough to understand it all.
Okay, so a minute ago you asked me, it wasn't my favorite character, it was just what characters are Star Wars to me. How about you? Is there somebody I haven't mentioned that you're saying, no, you should have said this guy?
That's... Oh, no. No, I mean, Darth Vader, obviously. I mean, he is the ultimate villain, and, you know, just his presence, you know, even if he wasn't speaking, you know, his physical presence and the, you know, that he could use the Force to choke people and everything, I think was quintessential Star Wars to me. I guess not really a character, but, well, I guess it would be an extension of Han Solo, but the Millennium Falcon, you know, when I think of Star Wars, I immediately think of the Millennium Falcon before I think of X-Wings or Star Destroyers or anything like that. You know, that ship is just a, you know, almost like a logo to me for Star Wars. But I guess that comes from Han Solo and Chewie. I mean, it's definitely a story about the Skywalkers, and I think that'll continue in the new movies. But I really, you know, if you think about your old fantasy stories, you know, where you have the cleric and the different team assembled. And I think that's what I liked so much about the first movie, Star Wars, was because you had the farm boy who met the magician. And then you met, you know, kind of this smuggler, scoundrel, you know, ruffian type guy. And then, you know, and you have Chewbacca, who's kind of the heavy. And then they go and they find the princess, and she becomes part of this team, and they all, you know, rally together. And so I guess that the core team there, where you have Luke and Han and Leia, you know, they kind of form that basis. And then, you know, I know it sounds like I didn't like the prequels tonight as I'm talking, but who was that core for the prequels? And I think I said on my previous shows that I really think that the prequels should have been the journey of Obi-Wan instead of the journey of Anakin. Because as we went through Star Wars, you heard about the Clone Wars, and that's where Obi-Wan came from. And we just always wondered what that would be like with the Jedis and fighting in the Clone Wars, and what was that. And that's what we were expecting to see in the prequels. At least that's what I was expecting. So I was thinking it was more an Obi-Wan tale. But we didn't see the Clone Wars. All of that was either between the movies or behind the scenes, or didn't even happen until after the prequels were over. And so I guess that was kind of a disappointment, that we didn't get to see the Clone Wars and who the heroes were. I guess I'm missing out because I'm not watching the cartoons, but
That guy in the line with me at Comic-Con loved that cartoon.
Yeah.
And he told me about, we were in line for hours, as you always are. And he told me about episodes that he really loved and characters that got way more development because of the TV series than they ever did in the movies. And I mean, that's part of what television does so well too, is they can take a guy like, gosh, what's the squid face guy? Is it Kit Fisto? And you can get to know this guy and what his background is and whether he has a sense of humor or not and what his philosophy is. And you can watch him grow and suffer and care about him. Yeah, it sort of made me wish that I had watched that cartoon. Maybe I'll watch the next one. I guess the next one is going to be set between the prequels and the original trilogy, and that's a time period I have interest in. So that'll be cool.
There's a new cartoon coming out?
Yeah, it's called Star Wars Rebels, and I don't know when it's going to start. I think fall of next year. But yeah, something that Obi-Wan said in that first movie that I longed to see was Darth Vader helped the Emperor hunt down and destroy the Jedi Knights.
Right.
And if we can see that in that show, that I would really look forward to. I mean, I don't really want to root for the bad guy, but Vader is the greatest of all bad guys. And so, you know, I can't help but admire when he does something well. And see, I don't know. The character of Anakin, I never really felt anything for. I think it was a huge mistake to have two different actors playing Anakin. Then a lot of the either I don't know if it's the acting or the lines that they gave him. A lot of times it was really hard for me to see him as a character and not as a, I don't know, a bad line or a badly delivered line or nonsense. But on that Clone Wars cartoon, I have no doubt that you learn to love him and fear for him and know that he's going to turn to the dark side and wish that there was some other way. And that's how we should have felt when you make a series where you know that the good guy is going to turn bad. We should long for there to be Doc Brown arriving in his DeLorean and saying, no, there's a way to fix this, Anakin. You know, it didn't happen for me. And granted, I think I hate the prequels more than you do from the way you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed in them, but there were moments that I really liked.
But yes, the Anakin moment that I really like is after he's killed the sand people. And he's sitting and he says, you know, they're like animals and I slaughtered them like animals. And he's, you know, there's this rage and hurt and I don't know what it is. But that is my favorite scene with Anakin. It really, I feel it. And those guys deserve to die. Anybody would in his place have killed them. Now, I don't know that they would have killed the women and the children like Anakin did. But it's just like, no, that is a totally realistic step toward the dark side. And I didn't find any of that in episode 3. But I really like that, you know, they're like animals, just the way he says it. And I slaughtered them like animals. Because you could hear the Emperor saying, you know, your hate has made you powerful. Good. Even though he wasn't in that scene.
Right. Yeah, I wish there would have been more between Palpatine and Anakin, where you could really see Palpatine getting his claws into the psyche of Anakin and really, you know, reaching in there. There were some scenes in there, but they were just kind of, I don't know, just to move the plot along, it seemed like. We don't need to talk about the Anakin Padme thing. But I was kind of disappointed in that, too. I thought there'd be a lot more emotion involved with that. Not necessarily, you know, a romance thing, but more anguish and more feeling between them than there was.
Well, you know, in Lucas's defense, those darn prequels were so ambitious. And there were so many characters and so many plot points and so many things that had to be answered or resolved that 3 movies was probably not going to be satisfying unless you did them like Lord of the Rings, and each one is 3+ hours long.
Right.
And he chose to focus on a few things that I wish that he hadn't, but it would have been an uphill battle for anybody. With these new movies that Abrams, I'm assuming he's doing all 3, and why there only have to be 3, I don't know, but they have much more of a, you know, a carte blanche to just say, maybe Maybe there's just going to be two main characters. Or maybe these are going to be the grandchildren of Luke and Leia. And we'll only meet those guys at the beginning of the first movie, and then we'll be able to go off and we'll be able to make movies with these guys for 20 years. Or, you know, maybe, I mean, I have no idea. The sky is the limit when you're not trying to fill in, when you're not trying to answer questions that have already been asked.
Yeah, I saw some rumor that suggested that Palpatine might be coming back. And I was kind of disappointed to hear that, because that's kind of recycling an older foe, an older character. Had you heard that?
I hadn't heard that. But in like 90 or 91, there was a comic book called Dark Empire. I think mentioned it.
Yeah.
And they brought the Emperor back, and I was so furious, because it did what the comic books always do. And I just, no, don't bring him back. You know,
what did he do? Go into a clone or something like that, I think?
I don't remember. I didn't read it. But I just, I hate that. I hope that's a false rumor. You can come up with all sorts of cool villains on your own. Darth Maul could have been a totally awesome villain on his own.
He could have.
And so it's just, I think that Big and I sat down on That Gets My Goat, and we talked about the prequels, or sorry, what are they calling these? The sequels. And I would love for the chance to work on these things. The onus of the prequels was super, super heavy on poor George Lucas. And a lot of people say, you know, he ruined my childhood. Or, you know, he made the three best movies ever and then the three worst movies ever. And that onus is not on J.J. Abrams nearly as much for these. And if he wants, he can throw up his hands and say, oh, I'm just going to do this one. Whereas Lucas was tied to it, so tied to it that I get the impression that he didn't feel like he could trust anybody else to come in and work on it with him and sit down and say, you know, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? But if you've got a bunch of people and they all have their own ideas, and you've got, and I'm assuming Kathleen Kennedy is the person that they all have to answer to. I don't know.
Yeah.
It would be great to sit them all down and say, what would you like to see? Okay. What would you like to see? All right. How can we take these ideas and make the best movie out of them, or the best series of movies out of them? And you don't have to show how Luke's son turns to the dark. Was it Luke or Han's son?
Han's son.
You don't have to show that. You don't have to show how Mon Mothma dies or anything like that. I mean, basically, you just have to have John Williams' music and maybe R2 and 3PO, and it's Star Wars. Whereas for the prequels, if we hadn't seen Anakin turn to the dark side, if we hadn't found out who Luke's mother was, or hadn't seen how the Empire rose and the Old Republic fell, we would have been tremendously disappointed, or people would have said that's what the movie should be. And Lucas threw in a bunch of characters like Boba Fett, I think in an attempt to appease the fanboys who wanted to see all these things. But you don't have to do that in these sequels. If they said, sorry, R2 and 3PO aren't going to be in them, I'd be like, oh, that's too bad, but it's not going to ruin the movie for me. But if we didn't see Anakin seduced by the dark side and become Darth Vader, everybody would have been frustrated and throwing their popcorn.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's kind of a line there, and I think they'll do a good job with it. I'd like to see something totally new and different, but not so new and different that it becomes something like another type of science fiction, you know, where we have some kind of a Romulan war or something like that. You know, I think there's that line there where you can go into new territory, new types of characters, new storylines. You know, there will be Jedi and things like that, but you don't have to rehash what you did in the other Star Wars movie, but there needs to be enough of that callback and uniquely Star Wars type things to keep it from becoming something totally alien from Star Wars.
Okay, well, Marshall, define those things. What do they have to have for us to say that is Star Wars?
I would say you would have to have... that's a good question. You would have to have the sense of adventure, and you would have to have a group of friends that, and not all of them maybe you could trust. You know, I go back to Star Wars, the first movie, where you have this group of people that, you know, they didn't know if they could trust Han Solo to come through. Luke wasn't even sure of himself. You know, they were facing almost impossible odds, and yet their hope and their, you know, continued striving against the Empire is what brought it all together and made it happen. And so I think you need that a good core of characters that have that relationship, not a love triangle, but just some kind of a connection or something that they're all driving toward and that drives them together where they probably wouldn't have in the first place. Does that make any sense, or am I just rambling?
Well, it makes sense, but I think I was just looking for, okay, give me five things that it has to have in it for it to be a Star Wars movie, like a lightsaber and stuff like
right.
that. But no, but you took it much more philosophically. You know, it's like, what worked and what would I like to see again?
Yeah.
And that's valid too. I don't know how much longer they'll be able to keep it a secret. Once they start shooting, we live in a totally different age than the original trilogy was shot in. And there will be, the prequel trilogy happened in the age of the internet and of cell phone cameras and all that stuff. And so we'd see things long before we were intended to see them. And I'm assuming we'll know way more going into this one than we would have otherwise. But anyhow, sorry, go ahead with what.
You definitely have to have the Jedi and the Force, and you have to have some kind of a dark force presence, I think. It doesn't necessarily have to be a new Sith, but it could be, you know, something sinister. Did you read the Heir of the Empire trilogy?
Yeah, I read the Thrawn books.
Yeah.
I probably have read five or six Star Wars books.
Yeah.
But I never read the ones that came later that were all tied together and there was an invasion from like a ridiculously powerful alien force.
Right.
That stuff sounded really cool to me, though.
Yeah, I don't know how close it came to, you know, making it, you know, more like a Star Trek thing. Because I haven't read them either. I read a lot of the first ones that came out. But that Thrawn trilogy, I think was a perfect follow-up to the first trilogy, you know, where you have a good villain who's, you don't know what he's up to exactly, and he's very formidable, and there is this dark side of the Force influence that he's working with, and then you have these new characters like Talon Card and Mara Jade who tie in with the original trilogy, at least Mara did. And then you have Card kind of becomes the new wild card character, like Han Solo was in the original trilogy, where, you know, you don't know quite where his loyalty is. And I just thought that whole series was a perfect example of what Star Wars was. And then things started to veer off and go different directions after that. So that would be what I'd like to, not them to redo those books, but I'd like to see them do something like that, where they take new characters and have callbacks to the original trilogy without, you know, being a love fest kind of thing.
Well, how excited are you, or unexcited, about seeing Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford again in these roles?
I don't know if it matters if they're in it. I think it would be neat. I think it would be a good. I don't think they need to be an essential part of it, but they could be, you know, have their cameos or their moments, at least in the first movie, to give them their due kind of thing. But I don't think they need to be central to it. And if they're not even in it, I would be okay with that too. How about you?
Oh, you know, I kind of hope that they're not in it. I mean, I think it's all but guaranteed that they will, but it would be neat if it was just like a little cameo, you know, that Leia is you know, a queen or president of the Republic or something like that, and you see her address her people or something like that. I don't know. At Comic-Con, they showed a book cover from an upcoming Expanded Universe book, and it's the first one that they've done using current photographs of Ford, Hamill, and Fisher.
Oh.
All the others, they used press pictures, you know, from the making of the original trilogy.
Right.
And it was horrifying. It was so awful. And I asked the guy at Del Rey, wait, why? What is this? What has happened with this? And he was all proud. He's like, yeah, we've got likeness rights for the current actors. And I said, no, you don't understand. Carrie Fisher can get old, but Princess Leia can never get old. Take that down now.
Right. Well, you know what would be cool is if, you know, I'm assuming that Luke becomes, you know, the new Jedi Master kind of thing. And, you know, maybe you could have him on a holocron teaching the newer Jedis that he had passed on, but he had left all of his instruction in this holocron type thing. That might be a neat way to do it. I don't know. I guess they could do it kind of like, you know, on Next Generation, the pilot episode of that where DeForest Kelly is on board the Enterprise and he's talking to Data. And I thought that was a good cameo moment for him, paying homage to the original Star Trek series without it being a whole big deal.
Yeah, I thought that was a wonderful scene too. And it, I mean, since he was the first to go too of all those cast members, it was always ironic that it's like, well, he's there, he's the one that's supposed to have lived through all this time.
Right.
But he has that little speech about the ship's name being right, and then he walks away, and the camera just stays and watches him walk away. That's classy. And I think that you can do something classy with those three actors or whoever you choose to come back. But you can also do something that's heavy-handed or that's, I don't know, that fan service. And
right. Well, like
I don't know that Big,
you and Big always talk about that moment, you know, with Yoda saying, oh, thank you, Chewbacca. You know, if it's like that, it's not going to be a good thing.
See, yeah, sorry. I just have so many little nitpicks with those prequels.
No, I remember, agree with you on that one.
I remember being excited when I heard Chewie was coming back. Oh. I think part of what makes that Star Trek The Next Generation moment work is that they never say that it's Dr. McCoy. They just say the Admiral. And for some reason, that sort of takes the stink off of it. If it, you know, if Yoda had just, you know, thanked the Wookiees for their valiant service, I don't know that I would have had the problem with it that I do. But, you know, I just have issues with that movie. There are so many characters in the Star Wars universe that could come back. You know, characters that are immortal, like the droids, or, you know, Chewie could be there, or I'm sure somebody has asked Billy Dee Williams if Lando's going to come back. Part of me just thinks maybe nobody comes back and just say, you know, we're starting afresh. And if you want to see Han, if you want to see Yoda, if you want to see the droids, we've got movies coming out with them in them.
I'm almost looking more forward to those than I am the episodes 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything about those since they announced them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's happening with that. I mean, they can't just be waiting to see how episode 7 does before they decide to go ahead with these other ones.
No, I would think they'd have to start developing them now. Probably, you know, if they do they didn't announce what they were going to be. I think everybody's assuming they'll be like a Han Solo one.
Oh, see, I thought that they said Han Solo, Yoda.
Oh, that's right. They did say.
And I think they said Boba Fett was the third, but maybe I'm imagining. Maybe it's wishful thinking. let's make us not like this character even more.
Well, do we want to leave it there for now?
You know, that feels like a good moment to stop. I mean, I would love to ask you about if we ever do this again, I want you to say what your favorite moment in each of the movies is.
Okay. So, yeah,
kind of like I did with Anakin saying that he slaughtered them like animals in that episode 2. It's fun to look back, but it's also fun to look forward and say, you know, we've got a lot of adventure ahead and more John Williams music ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the cool part about it is that it's like I was saying in the earlier episode, you know, it really is the next generation of Star Wars with different creative people putting it together. So I think it'll be a good thing, even if we don't like parts of it.
Okay, well, hey, thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, great to have you over. Hopefully Big doesn't feel like you're cheating on him or anything.
Oh, well, I don't know. Turnabout is fair play. Wait, no, that would insinuate that he had cheated on me in the past. All right. Well, R-O-8-O-T, cut that part out, please.
Yeah, I need to borrow him.
Well, we haven't used him in so long. I'm sure you could take him and we wouldn't even notice.
Well, thank you for coming on, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Well, thank you. I hope that we can.
Rish, you've got a lot of guts coming here after what you pulled.
Marshall, the Force will be with you, always.
Strewn Along the Path is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Feel free to share it, but do not change it or sell it. The theme music, as always, is brought to you by Man in Space.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
That was creepy. At the end of your last episode, I was walking out of the room and you said, "Journey on, Rish Outfield." And I paused in the doorway. And I was like, wait, what? And I had to run back and rewind it because I thought that I had imagined that.